This show is supported by State Farm. You have insurance for your home, your health, and your car. Why don't you have insurance for your small business? So many small business owners think they don't need or don't even know about small business insurance. Protecting a source of revenue is one thing, but so is protecting all of your hard work and your team members. State Farm agents are all small business owners too, so they know how to help small business owners choose personalized policies that fit their budgets. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Ginny.
I'm Jen.
And we are the Art History Babes.
We're here in beautiful Oakland Hills area.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
It is. Oh.
It is. No, it's really beautiful. It's been real cold and foggy in California lately. So yes.
Very mysterious.
Yeah, everything feels like Silent Hill. Like it's just like, ooh. Yeah.
Especially mist and like fog rolls up here and you're kind of like, I'm in Avalon, but not.
I'm the lady of the mist.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
that's who I want to be.
Yeah. It's been very chilly, but then at the same time, I know our East Coasters are out there in like negative -7.
It's nothing.
Sorry, fam.
Like, it's 50 degrees today.
Ooh, it's chilly.
Yeah, I know I've mentioned this before, but I came back from spending 10 days in the Midwest and like relativity is such a crazy thing because before I left, like I was like, yeah, 50 degrees. I was like in my coat. Mm-hmm. And then I came back from, you know, negative 15 degree weather. And like for days I was hot all the time here. Mm-hmm. Like even when it was only like 50, 60 degrees, I was just always hot because my body was still like used to negative temperatures. Yeah. It's crazy how that works.
I know.
I'm going to be freezing my ass off when I get back from Mexico.
Sure will be.
I checked the weather and the highs are about, I think the high right now is 87 in the city that I'm going to. The low is like 68.
Dang.
And I'm just, and I know for a fact that my family is out there wearing like winter coats. Because they are so cold.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Don't they, like, isn't it a thing, too? I remember you talking about this. Like, even in, like, triple-digit heat, men won't wear shorts.
No man wears shorts.
That's so crazy.
No shorts. It is legitimately, like, long pants and even long sleeves. Because everyone is kind of paranoid about the sun, especially the women.
Yeah.
So they stay covered up.
Right.
So that's wild.
Yeah, that is wild. Okay. Contrastingly, in the Midwest after the winter, after like negative 20 degree weather for however long, people, like lots of people, this isn't just like one weirdo, will be in shorts and like 20 degree weather because it feels warm.
Yeah.
Like it feels like it's like spring is here. So people will be running around in shorts in 20 degree weather.
Unreal.
That is crazy.
It is.
They're wearing shorts in the summer and it does get really hot in the summer, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It gets just as hot as
so
it is.
So they'll wear
here.
An outfit that they would wear in like 90 degree weather and 20 degree. That's
it's weird.
Really strange.
But yeah, we're here
in the new year.
In the new year. New year, new me, you know, is the motto that we all have.
New me, but like old me.
Yeah, old
you know?
Me, but like trying to.
Still me, but like some new stuff.
Trying to do some new stuff. Like I was just telling everyone, I'm getting into investing. I'm an investor now.
You are an investor.
I if you are like me and you've just kind of pretended like investing is dumb and like
just that's dumb.
It's just dumb. I'm just not gonna think about it. Well, I'm trying to be more of an adult and I just started using this really dope app called Acorns. And it's perfect for people like us that don't know anything
it's
about
it.
It's
very
investing.
Clever they called it Acorns, too, because, like, you're scavenging away a little bit here and a little bit there like a squirrel.
And you're burying your acorns and for later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's
very clever.
It's super clever. And it also, like, it's just a cool app because it also has, like, resources that help you learn about investing, like, what you're actually investing in. And it's just a very simple platform that, like, breaks up your investment according to these big, like, larger...
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not investing in specific companies. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, a bigger, larger type investment.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's a really cool little app. I'll link it down below for y'all if you want to.
Yeah.
And they're not sponsoring us. This is just.
We're literally doing free advertising for this app right now.
For all of you.
Yeah. You hear that, Acorns? If any of you work for Acorns or Acorns adjacent, you should hit us up.
Hit us up, you know, because we have no problem repping apps that we like.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's a very timely app because it seems as if the world's going nuts right now trying to invest in this whole Bitcoin, cryptocurrency shenanigans. I've got friends that are like, I put $1,200 in Ripple. I'm like, what the hell is that?
No, but the Bitcoin thing's really interesting because I actually remember when Bitcoin first became a thing, like back in like...
It was like early 2000s, right?
Not that long ago. It was like 2010.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was... yeah, it hasn't been around that long. And I remember seeing people talking about it and I was like, is this something I should I buy a few of these Bitcoins?
Well, it's crazy because Dogecoin came out and it was a joke.
The meme dog,
oh, you know? And it was like a joke. The person who put it out was like Dogecoin. It's worth like a lot of money now. That, like if you'd have bought Dogecoin.
People will invest in some strange things.
Right.
It really just speaks to how we determine what has value. It's really all on us.
It
you know?
Blows my mind. I don't get it.
I don't either.
I really don't.
But
like
it's basically you just have to be confident enough and tell people something has value and it happens eventually.
Dude,
it friggin' happens.
It does. I watched this movie last night. It's a Netflix original with Jack Black and Jenny Slate, who I both love independently.
Ooh, Jenny Slate. I love her.
Called
so
Polka King. And it's based on the true story of a Polish immigrant who became the Polka King of Pennsylvania.
Wow.
And he had like a polka band.
Wait, is Jack Black the polka king?
Oh, he sure is.
Yay.
And he's marvelous at it. And so he builds this polka empire where he has, you know, his polka band and like a traditional Polish gift shop and a record label and something else. And he basically starts a Ponzi scheme. So he has like all these older people, these elderly people that like love polka. They start investing in him and he makes like tons of money. I don't want to like give it away, but it's all like based around this Ponzi scheme that he started to be the polka emperor.
Polka yeah. Dude, beyond king. Yeah.
People investing in polka.
Man,
I don't get it, but it happened.
Right? People will invest in some crazy things.
I'm really interested in this app. I'm going to download it and I'm going to invest because I could stand to expand my assets.
Yeah,
your empire.
Yeah.
It's also just like really inspiring because on the app, there's like this part of it where you can be like, what would happen if I invested $5 a week every week? And then it gives you like a calculation of how much money that would be worth when you're like 60. And it's very inspiring. It just like makes you like, all right, I can do this. I can do $5 a week.
You nice.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah. So Art History Babe Nation, get your money in order.
Yeah. Click that shit. Get on over to Acorns.
Check it out. All right. So
now for something totally different.
Yeah. We are going to talk to you guys today about an amazing babe, an art history babe mm-hmm. among our hearts, Miss Mary Edmonia Lewis.
Yeah. When had you guys first heard of her?
I actually had first heard of her in the class that I was TAing. It was an American art class.
Right.
And I'm not going to lie, a lot of it I was not into.
Yeah.
Not really. I mean, there are some like random like American art artists that I like go nuts over, but they're few and far between, at least in the early days of America. I'm just not that into portraits of presidents and stuff like that. But we talked about her and I was like, this woman is so interesting. How have I not heard about this woman? Mm-hmm. But yeah, when did you hear about her?
Not that long ago. Probably, I want to say like in the last year and a half or so, I think Google had put her face, you know, like how Google have like those little illustrations of people and you can click on it and learn more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's when I heard of her earlier in 2017.
Yes.
They had the doodle.
And I was like, wow.
Yeah. I had never even heard of a work that we're going to get into, The Death of Cleopatra. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a relatively unknown to me, at least. Let's get into Edmonia Lewis.
Let's do it. All right, so just a little biographical information. She was born July 4th, 1844 in New York. Born Mary Edmonia Lewis. She's typically known as Edmonia Lewis. She was the first internationally renowned African-American sculptor.
Yeah.
Kind of a big deal.
A huge deal.
Like a gigantic, massive deal.
Yeah, end of the 19th century. Like, this is huge.
Mm-hmm. And she was of African and Native American heritage. Until her teen years, she went by her native name, which was Wildfire, which is dope. Yeah,
that is so cool.
That's such a good name. Her father was Afro-Haitian, while her mother was half Ojibwe.
I also heard that, I don't know if this is the same, but the some of the sources had her listed as being Anishinaabe Indian.
Yeah, I've got Mississauga Ojibwe.
Yeah.
And half African American. Her mom was both.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure if any of you are Native American scholars out there.
Correct us.
Yes, please do.
What I have is that Chippewa in parentheses Ojibwe. So I think there were multiple names assigned to it, but.
Oh, yeah, you're right. This has been. Oh, you know what?
The two are interchangeable.
I'm seeing that Ojibwe is the central Algonquin language spoken by the Anishinaabe people throughout much of Canada, from Ontario to Manitoba, and from Michigan to Montana. Wow.
All right.
Got it.
Dope.
All right.
Just dope.
So both of her parents died by the time she turned 9. Yeah. And she went to live with, I believe, an aunt and uncle?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And at age 15, she studied at Oberlin College in Ohio, which was one of the first institutions that accepted women that weren't white.
Yeah.
So,
wow. Go Oberlin.
Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Despite Ohio was a very, like, conservative thinking place.
Yeah.
But yeah, they made some strides there. She was, at one point during this time, put on trial for poisoning two of her friends.
Yeah. This shit is crazy.
So, as the story goes, they were planning to go sledding with a group of men, and
trouble.
Just men in general.
Sorry.
Lewis and two friends drank some spiced wine. They're going to go out, have a good time. And it emerged that the women had been poisoned with cantharides.
Spanish fly.
Yes. So I was unfamiliar with this. Cantharides is referred to as Spanish fly, even though it is not Spanish or a fly.
Yeah.
It is from a blister beetle.
Whoa.
Yeah, right.
That's quite the name.
So there's a chemical in the body of this beetle that's an irritant. When it's rubbed on the body, it produces blisters. I.e. blister beetle.
Oh.
And when the dried, crushed body of the beetle is eaten, it causes inflammation of all the organs of the genital tract, including the genital organs.
Oh, hell no.
Really bad. Yeah, really bad. Rough. Really bad.
This gave rise to the belief that it was an aphrodisiac and could be used to treat impotence. And I don't no one wants to have sex when they're
all itchy and inflamed. That's like, sounds awful.
Like, if I feel uncomfortable in my genital tract, why would I want to have sex? Like,
I'm about to drink some cranberry juice and like
go to bed.
Yeah.
Netflix alone.
Yeah. Get out of my house.
But the swelling that this induced could be extremely painful, unsurprisingly. And the dose required to produce the swelling was close to fatal.
Oh, no.
So this is one of those things where people are really just toeing the line. Like, you could do some really dangerous stuff here.
Dude, 10 milligrams can kill?
Yes.
That is not a lot.
It's not. I mean, when we were just talking about, because weed's legal in California now.
Yes. We've arrived.
Smoke weed every day.
Yes. So a friend of mine just went to a dispensary today, and he was, his mind was blown because there were edibles that were 1,000 milligrams.
Whoa.
Yeah. Like, I don't, that's insane.
I just have anxiety, like, just thinking about that.
Yeah.
Like, ugh.
But, I know, right? But 10 milligrams in an edible, that's like a good amount.
Yeah.
It's like chill. Yeah. That's pretty chill.
You're chilling. You can go for a walk.
So basically not that much of something to put in your body. And in women, this powder could cause painful contractions of the uterus. And for this reason, it was used to induce abortions. Mm-hmm.
God damn.
Yeah. So really, like, this is not a chill thing at all.
That sounds so insane. Where would this even come from? Like, you know, who crushed up this beetle and was, you know, like, all right.
Yeah. This medicine men stuff, like, back in the day. Just always trying to learn from their surroundings, you know?
So did you read this? Because, like, when I had originally first read about this, I didn't know that they drank spiced wine before going out on the sleigh ride. I had, like, kind of interpreted it as that they were in the sleigh and that the male companions had, like, slipped it to the gals.
That's entirely possible. This was just that was the way it was phrased from my source, they were drinking before they went sledding. But that's something that could really easily be.
Either way, it seems like it was an accident that they died.
They didn't die.
Oh, shit. No. I thought they did.
No. They didn't die.
They lived.
Ooh. They and so while on trial, a lot of bad shit happened. Edmonia was beaten by a group of men.
Some stupid vigilantes.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And then her friends made full recoveries, and she was acquitted because essentially they didn't have enough evidence. Mm-hmm. And really, like, none of us have evidence either way. Maybe she did do it. I don't know. But, like, I
doubt it.
I doubt it. Yeah. I have a pretty strong feeling that she didn't, but...
Like,
I,
for why, you know?
Like, I read it and I was just like, it was the men.
It was, yeah. That was my 100% my instinct, too. It was definitely the men. There was a theory. Okay, so this is a theory, and I disagree. Like, I was like, no, but it's a theory I read. That the reason she did it is because, like, so many women during this time period, if you were, like, a little eccentric or outside the norm or just didn't kind
of... You were called a lesbian.
Yes. If you didn't fall in line, you were a lesbian, and that was supposed to be a bad thing.
Lesbian spinster.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a lot of speculation surrounding her sexuality, and there was some article I read that was like, maybe she wanted to be more than friends with these girls or something. I don't know. I don't know the woman. Like, I can't say that that's impossible, but...
Maybe we can someday hold a seance.
Yeah.
I would love to. I want to ask Edmonia, what were you doing, girl?
what happened that day?
What'd you do? What didn't you do?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
But yes, my first instinct was it was
the men.
Damn it.
Sorry, guys.
But who knows? Who knows? It could have been a totally freak thing, and, like, none of those people were the cause of it.
Honestly, this whole, like, story is just a freak thing. Like, I mean, how does, you know, how does that happen? Like, I don't know. Anyway, that
maybe the girls themselves were curious and they drank it.
Right. Or, like, maybe one of them was pregnant and she was like,
can't be doing that.
I'm not wed.
Oh, no.
So many possibilities.
All of a sudden, we become a true crime case podcast.
Scandal.
Oh, we could do, like, an art history scandal series.
Oh,
scandals and mysteries of art history.
That'd be fun.
Oh, episode idea.
Boom.
Boom,
boom. Boom, 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 boom. All right.
Moving on.
Moving back into art history. her first commercial success was a bust of Colonel Robert Goldshaw. Mm-hmm. Gould?
Yeah.
Gould.
I
like Gould, too. So she made this bust. It's very regal. It is. He looks exactly like the image in my head of a 19th century colonel.
Right,
this man.
I mean,
right.
The hairstyle and the facial hair.
Like, that is a colonel.
Hold up. Is this before or after She didn't graduate.
Oh no, she did not.
No,
she did not.
Like, fuck you.
Yeah, Oberlin. She left the school.
She went to Boston.
Because she was being harassed and did not graduate.
Well, there was also another accusation. She was accused
she was stealing.
Of stealing her classmates' work.
Ugh.
And then that was later disproved.
Mm-hmm.
Lack of evidence. But at that point, she was like, fuck off, Oberlin.
I know. I'd be like, done. I'm like, y'all
I'm
can,
over it.
Like,
yeah.
kiss
yeah.
my ass.
Yeah.
I'm done with this school. Perfect. And then she went on to have some pretty moderate success when she moved to Boston.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This show is supported by State Farm. Insurance is a part of any solid financial plan. Making sure you have the important things in life covered is one of the best ways to give yourself a little breathing room when things go awry. It's important to protect not only your business, but yourself as a business owner and all current and future team members. State Farm agents know what it takes to run and protect a small business because State Farm agents are all small business owners and they live and work in your community. So they're deeply attuned to what's happening with other small businesses in your market. If you have a small business and are interested in making sure you're protected, reach out to your local State Farm agent to learn more about what you need. They'll help you find the right policy at the right price for your business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
So she moves to Boston where she's trained by sculptor Edward A. Brackett. And this bust that she made of Colonel Robert Goldshaw was fairly successful. And so she made decent money off selling copies of the bust. And this gave her enough money to peace out and go to Europe. So she went to Rome where she spent the majority of like her working life. She said, quote, "The land of liberty had no room for a colored sculptor." So she went to Rome.
So she peaced the fuck out.
So yeah, when she was in Rome, she was pretty successful and she established a life for herself in the city with other expat female sculptors and artists. And even though she was working from Europe, a lot of her sculptures had to do with themes from back home. So she made sculptures surrounding the Emancipation Proclamation. She sculpted freed slaves out of white marble, which is the preferred medium of neoclassical sculptors. So she was trained in the neoclassical style. And there's obviously, maybe you don't know this, but in Italy, there's a lot of marble.
Marble everywhere. I always forget.
Carrara.
I was lucky enough to take a bus through Carrara.
I would really love to go to that quarry. It would blow my mind.
It's really cool. Yeah.
It's out there.
Yeah, it's out there and it's very like white. Like the light like bouncing off all the marble. It's mm-hmm. just a very like bright place. It's very cool.
Totally.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing. I would love to see that.
I also just like quarries, like they're weird to me.
Yes.
Like these big
just as natural occurrences.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you?
Yeah, like I haven't been to the Grand Canyon for some crazy reason, but I'm very fascinated mm-hmm. by these like indents in the earth. You
totally.
Know?
Yeah, totally. Little side note, my art history boyfriend, Dr. James Fox, I've talked about him before.
Oh yeah.
He's a cutie.
Sure is. He did an episode on history of color, so we did blue, gold, white, mm-hmm. and for white he went to the quarry in Carrara and was like walking around in his little black suit and I was just like, oh man, this is what does it for me.
And I bet it just like popped too.
Oh,
him
it
and
was
his,
great
because like, he wears those like slim fit suits. Yep. Yeah.
Oh man,
he's a good looking dude.
BBC made a good call with that one.
Dr. James Fox.
I'm literally blushing. Okay, anyways.
She is.
Yes. I'm not exaggerating.
I feel like it's like when we talk about like, you know, like dream men, like ideal men, and like most people are like, oh, it's like Leonardo DiCaprio or like something, and it's like
Dr. James Fox.
It's this kind of obscure art historian.
Oh my god, I'm looking at pictures of Carrara right now mm-hmm. and it's amazing.
It's really striking.
Wow.
Yeah.
You can go hiking amongst the marble.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful.
It's so cool.
Oh my gosh. Go.
It's super cool.
Go there.
Everyone go there right now.
Meet you there in 2 weeks' time.
Art History Babes live at Carrara.
Oh my god.
I want to shoot a music video here.
No, I was just going to say, that'd be a dope place to throw a party.
Can you imagine?
That would be so sick.
The acoustics are probably great.
Oh my God. Oh, I'm up here. I got ideas.
Store it away.
Oh and shit.
Use it for when we're millionaires.
Yeah.
We should start a Google Doc for when we're millionaires.
No, that'd be great. We're gonna do. We'll just put it out into the universe. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a great idea. Yeah, that's 5 years time. Give me 5 years. We'll throw a party at Carrara.
Boom. All right, I'm on it.
Boom. I just need to keep up my investing with Acorns.
Right. Oh boy. Well, anyway, Edmonia had the right idea.
She did. It was smart to go to Rome. Being a neoclassical sculptor, you go to a city where there are a tremendous amount of classical sculptures in marble. Marble itself is easily accessible. And she's hanging out with other expat cool artists.
It's a cool time to be there. Like,
made the right choice.
Yeah, for real. Which brings me to the next work. A bust of poet Henry Wadsworth Longfellow.
God, the names on these guys are just so cool.
He's British, right?
Longfellow.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with yes.
Actually, I think he might be American. Henry.
With that name?
Hold on. Let's find out.
Wow.
He was born in Portland, Maine. Yep. He's American.
Wow.
Look at that face. Like he looks like a poet.
Right? He really does.
He really does. So if you go to edmonialewis.com, there are excerpts from this book that only costs $9.99 if you're interested, called The Indomitable Spirit of Edmonia Lewis, A Narrative Biography by Harry Henderson and Albert Henderson. Mm-hmm. And there are a bunch of passages on the website, which is what I read, but it's a very, it's very nicely written. It almost has a, like, historical fiction feel to it. Yep, you know, yep, it's yep, like yep. kind of piecing together these pieces we know and kind of turning it into a narrative. Mm-hmm. Which I appreciate, but it's very like romantically written. So basically, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow is in Rome hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up in the presence of Edmonia Lewis, and she does this she does this bust of him, which is like, I want this in my house. Like, I really like
it's
this bust.
It's very striking.
It's very striking. He's like, he's got the long hair and the beard. Like, oof. he looks like a man of many thoughts. And
he's got lots of thoughts.
He's got thoughts for days.
And this bust was actually, it got a lot of attention. A critic from the London Art Journal at the time said it was the truest and finest likeness of the poet I have ever seen.
Wow. Boom.
So, I mean,
that's pretty good.
That's pretty good. If you're a sculptor, that's, you know, like, that's kind of what you want to hear. So God, there's something about him. Like, he just like, I don't know why. I'm just very entranced by the sculptor. He just like looks deep in thought, but also like
really intense.
Yeah. Intense. Mm-hmm. Very intense and like regal.
And it's conveyed in the eyes, which is not easy to do in marble sculpture.
That's it. It's the eyes. Mm-hmm. It's the weird thing that's going on with the eyes. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like he's staring into an abyss. That's what I feel like. That's what I was trying to say. He's like staring into an abyss.
And the abyss is staring back. And he's like, whoa.
And he's just experiencing it. And then he goes and writes poems. So
sounds like my kind of guy.
Yeah. Right. Another really great, significant work of Edmonia Lewis is The Death of Cleopatra.
Oh, yeah.
And the interesting thing about this sculpture is that it was lost for decades, and it was found in all places, a storage room at a shopping mall outside Chicago in the 1980s.
That is so insane to me.
Yep, in a storage facility with Christmas decorations and dust. So before delving further into the story of this like suburban mall discovery, I'll start with the creation of Death of Cleopatra. So Edmonia worked on this sculpture for over 4 years, and the final sculpture depicts the fallen pharaoh dead already in her throne, her head decked in a pharaonic crown as it leans back. You know, her lips are slightly parted. You can tell that she is dead.
She did.
The drapery, and, you know, when I was talking earlier about Edmonia being in Rome and likely studying other, like, previous old classic sculptures, like you can tell with the drapery and the study of the drapery that she was looking at classical sculptures, like the way that the drapery is rendered and kind of like she shows a little bit of the breasts, not like a lot, but enough. And that is definitely from Greek and Roman sculptural tradition. And what's really interesting is, unlike other depictions of Cleopatra and her suicide, like if you just look up on Google, death of Cleopatra, depictions in art, it's all so, not all of it, but a lot of it is just super fetishized, and she's made to be like this exotic, like she's totally naked and is like holding a snake that's about to like bite her boob. And, you know, it's just like made by and for the male gaze. But what is so different about this is that she's already dead. And like, while her drapery like does show her breasts a bit, like she's not like sexualized. See, right, exactly. Like Jen pulled up one image where it's just over the top.
Yeah.
Like it's over the top how people portrayed her in art over the years. Like she wasn't a queen of Egypt, but like.
Well, I also, you know, remember hearing that the sexualization of Cleopatra has just like led to a very incorrect idea of what she even actually looked like. Like imagine her to just be this
beautiful, exotic, temptress, femme fatale. Yeah,
I heard she was.
She wasn't that cute. Well, yeah. Okay. So no one.
She wasn't all that.
There's still like not a clear consensus on what she actually looked like. Like when you go based off of her profile images on coins, she's not super idealized. But what she was undoubtedly was like very highly educated and like pretty motivated. And she used her sexuality in cases because she had
It just feeds into like the historical conception of her feeds into this idea that to be a powerful woman, mm-hmm. you have to be this ideal of beauty, mm-hmm. and you have, and like this, we should be more upfront about, maybe she wasn't that naturally cute. That doesn't mean she wasn't a badass.
Exactly.
You know, like she still did amazing things. And
right.
Because I think that just feeds into this idea that, like, you can be, like, a super powerful woman, but you gotta be pretty, you know?
Right.
Which is, like, crazy problematic.
Oh, yeah. What's especially interesting is that during the 19th century, like, Cleopatra even still now is an incredibly famous and infamous historical figure. People are always going to be fascinated by Cleopatra.
Yeah.
But in the 19th century, she was still viewed as, like, this exotic temptress that was both like alluring but also kind of demonized. And there was a lot of contention and debate about her heritage. So she was Greek Ptolemy on her dad's side, but no one knows the ethnicity of her mom. So she could have been Nubian or Egyptian or Ethiopian, in other words, African. So this was hotly debated in the 19th century, where people were like, she was Greek. No, she was Greek and African. And so it's interesting, especially that Edmonia Lewis picked her as a subject and depicted her in a way where she's represented more with dignity, like as an actual ruler in her death, rather than this mostly naked, bejeweled temptress. Who was a queen, but like that's a side note.
Yeah.
Every image of Cleopatra's death is, it just looks like your stereotypical like orientalist, mm-hmm. like harem, mm-hmm.
Totally.
Painting.
Totally.
So kudos to Edmonia Lewis for that. We love it.
So Death of Cleopatra was first shown at the Centennial Exposition of 1876 in Philadelphia, and it was incredibly popular. It then traveled to Chicago in 1878, and there it incited more admiration but also debate over the way that it was depicted. Like, oh, she doesn't look beautiful and sexy, and like, where's the asp? Where's the snake poised over her? Boob.
I said, where's the ass?
That's what I thought she said too.
Where that ass at?
I mean, it's in the chair. It's in the throne where it belongs.
is great. Asp.
Where is the asp? So the sculpture is 5 feet high and weighs over 2 tons.
Damn.
And it did not sell. And it was far too heavy and costly to ship it back to Rome, where Edmonia was still living. So she decided to put it into storage in Chicago. From there, it somehow ended up in a saloon for a bit.
This is such a funny thing to imagine in like a
I know.
Western saloon. I know.
It weighs 2 tons.
Yeah. It is how do you, solid marble.
How do you misplace that, you know?
I'd like to imagine like the old timey like bartenders and yeah. like what they thought about it.
That kind of like clangy piano playing yeah. in the yeah. back.
Well, like, it's Cleopatra.
then old Cleopatra.
Likely through winning it in a bet, it became the property of a Chicago gangster who later used it as a grave marker for his prized racehorse named Cleopatra.
Oh my god.
Well, that's kind of sweet.
He put it over the horse's grave outside the racetrack and had it in his will that no one could move it.
Oh my god.
So there it remained for years.
He loved that horse.
And a 2-ton marble sculpture as the grave marker for your horse. Like, I love animals too, but that is something.
Honestly, dude, if I was a gangster and I had that kind of money, like, you best believe that my dog is gonna have like the most regal grave marker.
I don't even think this was that much money for him at that point, because previously it had been in a saloon,
right?
Like, I don't think any, like, I think the consciousness of its value was
he was probably like drinking at the saloon one yeah. night. And he was like, what's this about? And they're like, oh, it's Cleopatra. And instantly he's like, thought,
I'm buying it.
My thought horse. Of his horse. Yeah.
That's my horse.
That's my horse.
So goofy.
Oh, God.
So the statue remained over his horse for years until the 1970s, when the U.S. Postal Service built a new facility by the horse grave.
Okay.
So then it was put into an outdoor storage yard. The Boy Scouts cleaned it. That was nice.
Oh.
Then later the Historical Society of Forest Park moved it to the storage facility by the mall, in the mall, where it was rediscovered and reattributed to Edmonia Lewis in the 80s, packed amongst Christmas decorations.
It was in the mall.
What a life that this sculpture has had.
I know, right?
What a life.
That's amazing. And it's in really good shape for having been, like, you know, tossed around.
Yeah. And, like, the Boy Scouts, when they cleaned it, they didn't do it, you know, the way that a conservator would.
They're Boy Scouts.
They're Boy Scouts.
They did their best.
They did their best.
I wonder if there's a, like, art conservation patch.
Oh, I want it.
They should have one.
They should. That would be fun.
They got their, like, sculpture renovation badge that yes. day.
Yes.
Sculpture renovation.
Sculpture renovation. But now it's restored.
Oh.
And it's all is right.
It's a dope again. Sculpture.
It really is. And like when you look at her face, like I put a close up image of it, she looks really serene.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like
she kind of almost has a smile, like
yeah,
a smirk.
Yeah, which is an interesting take on Cleopatra's death. Because all the circumstances leading up to it, like she was the last pharaoh of Egypt, like that was the end of the Egyptian Empire, and I would imagine Cleopatra was not happy.
Mm-mm.
When she did that. But it like is giving her a cool sense of agency where it's like, you know what, this was my plan. Yeah. I chose to kill myself so
I'm
I wouldn't be
done.
Dragged back to Rome and paraded naked through the streets of shame. You know,
I
this
can
is
also
my choice.
I imagine her life at that point was just racked with stress,
right?
And so I think it kind
of she had to marry 2 brothers, she killed both of them, had them both killed.
That's just a lot. And
it's a lot of stress.
I like the
not down, dude.
Yeah. I like this moment that at least gives me a sense of like it was like a release, like
yeah.
she was
right
ready to go and she was giving in to the universe. It
yep.
was her time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which
mm-hmm.
is really like that's like the most dignified death mm-hmm. you can imagine. You
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel like looking at this sculpture, I get a sense of relief.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that's cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
I really like it.
Now, imagining that this spent years as a horse grave marker.
Yeah.
I want to imagine that gangster, like, visiting his horse's grave and just, like, crying. Yeah.
Probably.
Seeing Cleopatra just, like, at rest. And he's mm-hmm. like, yes, Cleopatra is at rest, finally. And the sad part is, you know, that horse probably got, like, shot because it, like, broke its leg or something, you know?
Yeah, it was probably something stupid like that.
Man. Don't race horses. It's bad.
Just going to put that out there.
It's bad for them.
They don't like it.
They don't like it. All right.
We're not going to be getting any sponsorships from the Kentucky Derby anytime soon.
Good. I don't want to go there and wear a stupid hat.
Drink a mint julep. Mint juleps have so much sugar in them. They're delicious.
They are pretty good.
I would drink a mint julep, but.
I would too.
Wouldn't wear a hat. Wouldn't go to the Derby. Yep.
No. So, yep. Wow. That's really just this like really amazing sort of history of this woman. Something that I kind of am interested in is Edmonia Lewis's status as this non-white woman artist, and the fact that when you look at contemporary critiques of her work and just her person, it's impossible to find anything that doesn't somehow mention the fact that she is African American or the fact that she is Native American. There's usually some kind of comment about her appearance. And I just thought that it made me kind of sad because I thought, you know, she will always be labeled as this outsider artist. But Edmonia Lewis was very aware of her status as an outsider, sort of exotic personality.
Yeah. And I think I totally feel you. I mean, those are very similar thoughts I had while researching this. Like, it's definitely something we should stop and think about, you know? And we've talked about this before. Like, basically any artist, like whether you're a female artist or a black artist or an LGBTQ artist, like you're always labeled as something. Like, right. You're labeled as that artist. And that's complicated and it's hard. But I think also it is important to remember, like, she was the first African American sculptor
mm-hmm.
To reach this kind of prominence. So it's kind of very similar, like Barack Obama will always be the first African American president, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's, I think while it's difficult, it's important to recognize because of our country's fucked up history, you know? You can't just like ignore it because it makes it less powerful.
Right. And ignoring it is in a sense more problematic.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like either way, we're like,
You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Exactly.
I found some quotes from the contemporary press while she was in Rome. And so there's one interview from 1866 that really was praising her talent, but simultaneously noting how she prattles like a child.
That's rude.
And commenting on her crisp hair and thick lips. And I'm like,
son of a bitch.
For why? Like, if you're talking about her art, like, why, you know, anyway. So
for racism, that's why.
I know. Another account from this period describes her as curious and exceptional example of native artistic ability. Mm-hmm. So she was somehow like a savant. Like, she just didn't even try. She just had this natural talent, which there's no evidence for that at all.
No.
She was highly educated.
Well, and that also just speaks to the way we view Native American art. And I think I was just talking to Natalie about this actually, but I really want to do like some episodes on Native American art because
it
gets so fucking pushed aside. Mm-hmm. And like, there's, it's so good. Like, not even just contemporary Native art, but like, there's so many interesting visual ideas that have come from Native American artists, mm-hmm. and it just gets like ignored. And I think it ties to this idea of like, oh, so she's doing sculpture. She's doing sculpture of these, you know, important white men like colonels mm-hmm. and stuff, and she's doing it the way we want her to. therefore she's some kind of a savant because she's right. doing white art basically the way we want her to do right. it.
Yeah. So that's an interesting idea that she's doing white art. Part of some of the research that I did, I found a source in which the author is describing this really interesting like dichotomy between her use of the white marble to depict mm-hmm. people of color. And right. when you look closely at her depictions right. of Native Americans and even freed mm-hmm. African American slaves, mm-hmm. it's interesting to note that her female subjects are less, for lack of a better term, ethnic. Mm-hmm. They have more white features. They look more mm-hmm. white. They're much more European mm-hmm. in nature, mm-hmm. whereas the men mm-hmm. are shown to be the markers of race, mm-hmm. whether it is Black or Native American. And so an interesting theory about this is that since the female body has historically in Western art been a vehicle for the male gaze to project their sexual thoughts onto, the Black white female body is yeah. then going to provide even greater sexual license mm-hmm. because the Black female has historically in like Western society been associated with already being like sexually available right. and a more sexual body. Mm-hmm. And so the white Black female body is therefore like simultaneously this site of like excess sexuality and also eliciting some kind of like sympathy from the white viewer of mm-hmm. like, oh, look how beautiful this body that normally if I saw them on the street, I wouldn't quite associate that. But since it's here presented in this more European sort of like the white marble, it's more readily consumed right. by the white male viewer.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And so the question is, how much was Edmonia Lewis aware of this? And the answer is that probably a lot. There is a scholar of the name of Marilyn Richardson who made most of her career studying Edmonia Lewis. She was one of the chief scholars in just tracking down Edmonia's grave.
Yeah,
no one could find
She was the one that found Death of Cleopatra too, or yes. that attributed.
Yes,
yeah.
She found Death of Cleopatra, and she mm-hmm. spent years looking for yeah. Edmonia's death certificate or like yeah. where her grave is at. Ultimately finding her in an unmarked grave in London. Mm. So after basically turn of the 20th century, Edmonia Lewis just kind of faded into obscurity.
Yeah.
No one really knew what happened to her. Many claim that because neoclassicism fell out of favor,
right.
that she just very quickly became irrelevant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Many neoclassical artists did not make the transition to modernism. And so yeah. It's believed that she was one of them. Mm. And so Marilyn Richardson was instrumental in not only giving us a little bit of a idea of what the end of her life was like, attributing Death mm-hmm. of Cleopatra, but also just suggesting that her portrayal in the presses was not incidental, that Edmonia Lewis sometimes benefited from the exaggerated exoticism mm-hmm. of her identity, and that in some ways, she welcomed it because it helped obscure some of the scandal of her past.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So that's yeah. an interesting take on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, definitely.
One more problematic quote.
Problematic.
Another contemporary source quoted Edmonia Lewis as being so enraptured at the sight of a statue of Benjamin Franklin that she's quoted as saying, "I, too, can make a stone man." And that just sounds so goofy. And like, I don't think that she said that. So I make stone man.
Every quote I've seen of her, she sounds much more intelligent than that.
Yeah. So
I do make stone man.
I know. It's a lot.
I do make Ben Franklin.
Richardson, a quote by Richardson that I liked. She says, she worked both sides of the street. depending on her audience and her patrons. She emphasized her blackness or her Native American origins. She was very savvy about how to keep her identity in play. And that sounds totally spot on.
Everyone, I think, has every right to benefit from whatever part of their identity they want to.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I have always been of the opinion that we are living in a white patriarchal society, and any way that you can find to subvert that and use it for your own benefit is okay.
Yeah, do it. Yeah. Totally.
Even her contemporary critics made comments about her using her status as a black woman or a Native American woman as somehow gaining her more acclaim than she deserved. A man by the name of Henry James singled her out and said, you know, he's talking about the expatriate women sculptors in Rome. And so referring to Lewis, he said, one of the sisterhood was a negress whose color, picturesquely contrasting with that of her plastic material, was the pleading agent of her fame.
Yeah.
And that's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just,
wrong.
And I think it's really easy for people like Henry to make that kind of assertion, because when you're in the group that is already the go-to dominant group, when you're the white male privileged group, you don't have to use your status as that to gain anything, because you're already at the top.
Yeah. You're just called an artist.
Yeah, you don't have to think about what it means to even use the titles that society has given to you. Like, you don't have to consider that. Yeah. And so I think it's shitty and super easy for a guy like that to come at someone who is maybe using that to their benefit as though it is somehow lesser than.
Right.
You know? Right. And it's like, no, you're just using what you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's sort of like feminist art history 101. No white male artist is ever referred to in the catalogs as white male artist.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to change that, though. If we're going to identify everyone, then let's identify them, too. Yeah. Like,
so there you go.
There it is.
And that's all she wrote.
Oh, that was a fun episode. That was interesting.
And Moni is really cool.
She is cool.
I like her a lot. Mm-hmm. Y'all check her out. Edmonia, we salute you.
We salute you, girl.
All right, gonna do a quick listener mail. I really like this one. Okay. I mean, I really like all of them. You guys are seriously just the best. All right, this comes to us from Kelly. Hey, ladies, my name is Kelly. I am an undergrad double majoring in design for performance, read costume design, and art history at the University of New Mexico.
Wow.
That's awesome. All of that is great.
That is badass.
Super cool. I have been wanting to write to you for some time now, but I never quite find the words to express how much I love your podcast.
Aw.
Wow.
Anyway, I discovered your podcast about 4 months ago, and it really resonated with me. To be able to hear amazing women talking about art history, feminism, other social issues, and just generally making sense of this world is really inspiring and encouraging. Oh, it's so nice.
Oh, man. Thanks for believing in us, Kelly.
You all have such lovely perspectives. I wanted to share with you a specific instance when your podcast really helped me. The week that your Abstract Expressionist episode came out, I was having an awful week. I was in the middle of tech week for a show I was designing at the university. I had 4 papers due, and I was averaging about 2 hours of sleep every night.
No.
Oh, girl. Oh. I know that life.
Me too. I remember those days. So I was sitting in the library when I got a notification that there was a new episode from you ladies. And when I saw that it was AbX, which is my favorite movement, I started low-key crying in the middle of the library.
Oh, what?
Because I was so exhausted and you guys were just a ray of light in my long week. So thank you, because your hard work that you put into each episode is appreciated. I see you, your work, your passion for art, and I'm grateful that you are doing this, because making art accessible matters. Anyway, I would really love an episode on my homegirl, Georgia O'Keeffe, because she is pretty rad. Also, I just was in Minnesota and saw the exhibition Boundless Peaks Ink Paintings by Benoel Araki at the Minnesota Institute of Art. And if you have not seen his work, I really encourage you to check it out because it is quite sublime and lovely. If you ladies are ever in New Mexico, let me know because I would love to take you to the Folk Art Museum in Santa Fe and then out for some wine. Cheers, Kelly.
That sounds amazing.
And that, like, I was like tearing up while reading that. That's so sweet. And like, I know that feeling. Like, mm-hmm. I definitely had moments of legit crying in libraries, mm-hmm. and like, just like, mm-hmm. the littlest thing can really like
pick
help
you up,
pull you out. And mm-hmm. so I'm glad we were able to do that for you. And I just appreciate your very like thoughtful words mm-hmm. in encouraging us to continue yeah, doing what totally. We're doing. You obviously should continue doing what you're doing because it sounds amazing. And yeah, just thank you so much, Kelly.
Thanks for the suggestions, Kelly. Good luck.
So yeah, Edmonia Lewis.
Edmonia Lewis.
If you have any thoughts, we handle a lot of heavy material in this, so I'd really like to hear listener thoughts and engagement on this one.
Yeah.
Email us at arthistorybabes@gmail.com. You can find us on all the social medias. Please do so. We post hella art memes on our Instagram. So
all the time.
It's super fun. You should probably follow
I'm
us.
I'm scouting there for them every day.
What was that one that we put up of that like naked Spanish man? And oh, it's yeah. like the most likes we've ever received on a post. And I was like, oh, wow.
It's a naked Spanish man throwing pictures at Botticelli's Birth of Venus. Oh, and yeah. then underneath I put 2018 vibe.
Yep.
And I mean that wholeheartedly. Like that
oh,
is.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know what got more? The Bob Ross little stitch.
Oh,
thing.
The embroidery. The yeah. Bob Ross. We curate our Instagram. Oh, so yeah. definitely check out our Instagram at Art History Babes Podcast.
You'll love it.
Find us on Facebook and Twitter and all that. Head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/arthistorybabes. You will get access to bonus episodes every single month.
Bonus.
We post one. There's like 5 up right now. Mm-hmm. So you already have a bunch more content to listen to. Mm-hmm. Get on it. But we post one every month. And our patrons really help keep us motivated and moving forward.
Absolutely.
So please head over and check that out. And yeah.
We love you.
Have a good time. Have a great time. Have a good time.
Have a good time and a great time.
Both.
Bye.
The Art History Babes.
I thought.
Boob.
You said, where's the ass?
That's what I thought she said too.
Where that ass at?
I mean, it's in the chair, it's in the throne where it belongs.
This is great.
Thanks to State Farm for supporting this show and helping our listeners protect their businesses and lives. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.